time. Can you imagine if you're at the square, you know, you got your Grater's ice cream, sitting down, it's a nice warm day, and here comes a camera and a mic, and they're asking you a question like that. What does the church think about sex? I tell you, that would be a shocker, wouldn't it? That'd throw a wrench in your Saturday. Well, hey, would you join me in a word of prayer? God, we've been talking a lot about sex and finding out that you do have a lot to say about the subject. And so I just pray that as we spend some time together just learning what that might look like, you'd help us all to figure out how we can live out your design for sex and also what it means to lean into you in the process. I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. You know, it's funny, I look at some of those responses and it's almost like church and sex, and it's like heebie-jeebies, like, ugh, we shouldn't be saying those two things in the same sentence. But we've been really diving into that, and I can tell you that this conversation that we've been having here as a community has brought up some interesting conversations with my wife and I. So we've been having some interesting conversations in the Mingo household about this whole idea. And I think the Bryans have done a really good job of explaining the so what. You know, answering the question on the sign out there. What's the big deal? And we talked about that a lot during the last 2 weeks. And so this week is really about the second question that I think all adults need to have answered before we can grow or change in every area. Because I think the so what is critically important. And as adults, you know, we want to know why. And I think the Bryans have done a good job explaining that. And so this week is really about that second question, which is now what? How do we begin to apply that? Because, I mean, you know, let's be real for a minute. The Bryans, love those guys. But they're pastors. They're pastors. I mean, they kind of get paid to say that kind of stuff, right? You know, so yeah, they believe it. But for all I know, in the middle of a sex series, these guys are knocking off early at 2:30 to go and spend time with their wives and calling it research. I don't know. Now, you and I would call it an afternoon delight, but they're calling it research. So in the midst of all this is like, how does this play out in the lives of real people with real jobs? That's a slow burn. Some people will get that later. How does this play out? Because, you know, if you think you can hear just a couple of messages on this subject and change patterns and behaviors that have taken you years to develop, you're fooling yourself. This is a struggle. This is a struggle. And I know that because this is a big part of my own personal story. As I talked about a couple months ago, it's like, you know what? I've struggled with sex for a long time. I've struggled in relationships and kind of what I call serial monogamy, moving from one intimate relationship to the next and all the pain and frustration that goes along with that. I've struggled with pornography. I've struggled with all of these other issues that surround this idea of sex. And so I know what it's like to be in the seats that you're in, but to be in this vicious cycle, because I grew up in the church, so I knew all the stuff. I knew the information. But there would be times in my life where, you know, I'd really be committed to doing the right thing. That would last for a while. But then I'd fall into a temptation and I'd find myself in a situation where it's like, man, I can't believe I'm here again. And I'd come to church and I'd hear somebody say something else about the subject. And I'd pray and I'd cry and I'd say things to God like, I know this isn't what you want from me. And I'm sorry. And can you help me to do better next time? But I would find myself again in this vicious cycle. So it was this cycle of minimal change and minimal growth. And guess what? That's reality. I know I'm not alone on that. I know that's where a lot of us are. Somebody talked about this struggle, and this is how they put it. They said, it happens so regularly. The moment I decide to do good, sin is there to trip me up. I truly delight in God's commands, but it's pretty obvious that not all of me joins in that delight. Parts of me are covertly rebel. And when I least expect it, they take charge. I've tried everything and nothing helps. I'm at the end of my rope. Is there anyone who can do anything for me? And you know, these have been my sentiments. You probably had some conversations like this with friends of yours. But these words were actually said by what I would call a spiritual giant. You see, this is in Romans in the Bible. And these are the words of the Apostle Paul. And Paul was like, he was like the Bill Gates of the early church. I mean, talk about global, you know, kind of global distribution. This guy was spreading everywhere, Christianity. He was starting churches. He was helping people grow, doing all these amazing things. He wrote all these letters that make up like 2/3 of what we call the New Testament in the Bible. This guy was on point. But as he's writing this letter to a group of his friends in a church in Rome, he's saying, hey, if I'm honest, I have some times when I'm struggling through this thing. It's almost like it's dividing within me. It's like a war going on inside. So if that's where you are today, that's reality. Because this stuff is not easy and it is tough. And you know, for many of us, that just might be the reason why we're not engaging in this series. You know, I think it would be real easy to show up in these seats at 11:45 every week because it's just what you do. And not really challenge yourself to change on this one. You know, because you might say things to me like, Chuck, hey, I love the person I'm with. You know, we care about each other. I know they're not cheating on me. I'm in a relationship. Things are good. I just don't feel like God needs to speak to me about sex in this area. Or others of you might say things to me like, hey, listen, I'm spiritual, but I'm not that spiritual. I mean, sex is fun. What did Brian say? Sex is natural. Sex is fun. Sex is best when it's one-on-one, right? So some of you are like, hey, you know what? Sex is cool. I'm not hearing that. For others of you, it might be that this is like an addiction. No different than if somebody struggling with alcohol or with drugs. And you're saying, you know what? I've tried and failed more things than you could ever tell me. Just doesn't seem to work. I just don't really feel like God has my back on this one. And for all of those reasons, we can find ourselves in places where we're not really engaging in this series. We're kind of sitting back. We're taking in information, but we're not changing. And that takes us to the point that Paul is asking, because I think that last question is relevant. Is there anyone that can do anything to help me? For the people who want to change. And I'm here to tell you that change is possible and change is God's plan for you. It's God's will for you. But here's what I know. There are some pieces of this that we own. And then there's certainly this place for leaning into God. And in my own life, I've kind of had to wrestle through what both of those things look like. And that's what I want to share with you today. Because in my life, I found that there are four hills that I need to die on if I'm going to be sexually pure. We talk a lot about hills that we die on around here. And there are values that we have as a church. Things like community, things like realness, things like growth. These are things that we believe need to be a part of a community that's following God's plan. And so we just have those as hills that we die on. Those are stakes in the ground. Those are things that we're not changing on. And I found that because of my history, because of the past and the junk in my trunk on this one, I had to create some hills that I die on. And so I want to share those with you. But before I do that, I need to give you two disclaimers. The first disclaimer is this. Everything that I say today has a biblical foundation. However, it's not just based on a bunch of biblical research that I've done. I'm going to share with you things that come from my own trial, my own errors, my mistakes. And I found that these things work. You may have things that work for you. I can tell you, I know these things work. And I know these are the things that I own. And so I want to talk to you about those things. And for some of you, you'll hear things, you'll take them because it's where you are. And you'll connect with that. For others of you, it may not be where you are. And I understand that. But for others of you, a third group, you're going to feel a little bit like a Charlie Brown character at points today. Because who was that Charlie Brown character that always had the blanket?
Linus.
Yes, Linus. Linus in the blankie. Linus in the blankie. You know, Linus is very interesting. Linus is a lot like us. I mean, Linus, you think about it, he was this highly intellectual, very deeply introspective five-year-old, right? However old he was, had all his insight. But Linus sucked his thumb, and Linus walked around with a blankie all the time. And I think in a lot of ways, we're similar as it comes to this subject. We know stuff. We can put on a good face. But if we're honest, we're walking around with a blankie. We're walking around, and we know that some of our sexual patterns, they're things that we go to for pleasure. They're things that we go to feel good. And it's like a blankie. And so there'll be some things that I say that feel like I'm pulling on your blankie. Like I'm taking away your blankie. Now, before you get all freaked out about that, let's just take a step back and let me ask you a question. Do you honestly think that my purpose or my drive is really to make you feel like I'm pulling on your blankie? Yes! Absolutely it is. And here's why. How many people have babies or kids and you've been around them and they have a favorite toy or a favorite blankie? You know, let's say this kid drools a little bit. So they're drooling on this thing every day and they're dragging it through the mud. Well, at some point, it is in the child's best interest to take the blankie away, to take the toy away, because the dirt on the toy can do more harm than good. And for some of us, that's where we are. So there are going to be points where you feel like that pull is going on your blankie. Well, I want you to know that might just be God challenging you to change in that area, because there are things that we have as security that don't do us any good. And particularly on this one, if you feel that pull on the blankie, it may just be that's a place where God wants to challenge you to change. So I encourage you to think about that. Now, the first hill that I die on in this area is quite simply, guard your heart. Guard your heart. I have found for me this to be very critical. In the book, there's a book in the Bible, Proverbs. And Proverbs was written by a man kind of at the end of his life, and he's sharing wisdom on a lot of different subjects. And very early in the book of Proverbs, chapter 4, verse 23, we find these words. He says, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. What he's saying is your mind, your will, your emotions, that kind of collective part of you, that spiritual part of you that's not tangible, he's saying that is the wellspring of life. That's where life emanates from. And so we need to guard that. And I think that is so relevant in this area of sex and sexual temptation. We've got to guard our hearts on this one. We've got to guard our hearts. My wife and I, we go to the movies a lot. We love going to the movies. And I remember about a year ago, it seemed like every movie we went to, before the previews, they had a commercial. And the commercial was from the Stand campaign. This campaign against smoking. Anybody seen some of these Stand commercials? Well, these commercials talked about the fact that, you know, smoking doesn't just impact the people who actually are lighting up and smoking, but there's this whole thing of secondhand smoke. And it talked about the dangers of secondhand smoke as well. Well, I want to tell you, there's a guy, his name is Gil Revo, and he used to be involved in the porn industry. And Gil had kids, and after having kids, he kind of reevaluated his career choice a little bit. Understandable. And he said something I think is so powerful, and this is what he said. He said, smut is the cultural equivalent of secondhand smoke. Smut is the cultural equivalent of secondhand smoke. The things that we intake, the things that we ingest, that go against our heart, is like secondhand smoke. And I got to get with the guys a little bit on this one, because guys, I want you to know, Maxim, FHM, Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke from someone who knows. This is real stuff we need to deal with, because if we think we can take in that kind of stuff and that it won't impact our hearts, we're wrong. We're wrong. We need to guard our hearts. We need to guard our hearts. Jesus talks about this, and he's so clear about this. And actually, it's interesting, because this is a situation where Jesus and his disciples were in a conversation with people, and they were talking about foods. And in that time, there were some foods that were considered clean in that culture, and others that were considered unclean, and you needed to avoid those foods. And so it's in the context of that that Jesus kind of calls a reality check for his disciples. We find this in a biography of Jesus' life in the book of Mark. And in Mark chapter 7, we find these words. It says, "Are you so dull?" he asks. "Don't you see that nothing that enters a man from the outside can make him unclean? For it doesn't go into his heart, but into his stomach and then out of his body." And then he goes on to say, "What comes out of a man is what makes him unclean. For from within, from out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality." And he goes on to talk about these things. And what Jesus is saying is, and I think is so relevant for us today, we can be so focused on the outward things that we know are corrupting us. We can be so focused on things like, you know, I'm sure if I pull people in here today, I'm sure there's tons of people on diets. You might be on the South Beach diet. You might be on Atkins. You might be on Zone, low carb diet, sugar busters, whatever it might be. You might be on the South Cheat diet. That was mine. I used to do the South Cheat diet. But you're on diets. You know, people in here that are very vigorous and diligent about taking care of their bodies, hitting the gym. Got a membership to Goals, got a membership to the Y, whatever it might be for you. You're taking care of your outward body. And you know what? Absolutely good stuff to do. But at the same time, some of us, while we're doing those things to take care of our outward body, are letting all kinds of secondhand smoke in our hearts. We need to guard our hearts, because that secondhand smoke comes in, quite frankly, a lot by what we see, and by what we hear. And so I've just had to be real choiceful in my life. If this is going to be a hill I die on, there's some very practical things that I do. You know, there's a quote, and we've all heard it. It says, "Eyes are the window to the soul." Truer words have never been spoken. And you know what? For me, I just need to be choiceful about this. I'll tell you how this plays out for me. I'm not picking on any grocery stores in particular, but Kroger and Biggs. You go on Kroger and Biggs, and I'm really not. I'm not picking on them in particular, but just those two, because that's kind of where we shop. When you go and finish all your shopping, and you go into the checkout line, why is it that you can't get into a checkout line without seeing pictures of half-naked women? Is that just me? Is that just me? All these magazines, all these things, they're giving us images. And so what I've had to learn is, there's a verse that I've memorized in Job, and it says, "I've made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a woman." And I need to make a choice. Because if I'm thinking culture is going to help me guard my heart, ain't going to happen. I need to make a choice. Now, I can tell you, when you go into Kroger's and Biggs, I can tell you all about the layout of all the gums and the candies and the chocolates, because that's typically on the other side. And you'd be amazed at how many versions of Snicker bars there are nowadays. But I need to make that choice not to engage. And it's not that I can avoid it. It's right there. But am I going to stay there, or am I going to move somewhere else with my eyes? I need to look at that, and I need to guard my heart. Very basic things that for me have been so helpful. I just need to guard my heart on this one. And, you know, for some of us, you're saying, man, you know, the guys are probably tracking with me. guys know about the visual stuff because that's just kind of how we tick. But guarding your heart is relevant to everybody in here. You see, for women, sometimes it's about emotional connection. I think sex for men is about physical to a certain extent, more so than for women. But for women, it's about this emotional connection. So the gateway drug for women might be engaging in relationships for what you want in an emotional sense, but it's not healthy for you. You need to guard your heart on that. You need to guard your heart. You need to think about, am I engaging emotionally too quickly? We need to guard our hearts. Married people, not off the hook on this one. If you're married, I know it's easy to see things in other people that you wish your spouse had more of. I wish my spouse was a listener like that person is. Or I wish my spouse gave me compliments like that person does. You know, you could be in work, you could be at church, and you can find yourself thinking about those things. Well, guess what? Red flag, you need to guard your heart. And I've just found in my life that I need to have some things in place that help me guard my heart. That's one of the hills that I die on. A second hill that I die on is predefining your boundaries. Predefine your boundaries. We go back to the book of Proverbs, and this time in Proverbs chapter 5, and again we're getting wisdom from a guy who's kind of been there and done that. And in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 8, we find these words. It says, keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Now, I just want to contextualize this because I don't want you to feel like I'm saying, hey, it's about women and we need to figure out a way to get women out of the equation. That's not what I'm saying. In the context that he's writing it as a father to a son. And so he's saying, and it's funny because if you look at the verse, he places the responsibility not on the woman, but on the son. And he's saying, you need to keep to a path far from her. You need to predefine some boundaries and then take like 3 steps back from the boundary. And that's what this is talking about. For me, I think of the boundaries very simply in terms of people, places, and things. People, places, and things. You know, there are some people who help me live out God's desire for sex. And I need to kind of find ways to connect with those people because they encourage me to live that way. And there are some people who don't. And so I need to be choiceful about how and when I connect with those people, if I connect with those people at all. People can impact this. Places. Here's one for me. I know when I was dating, man, you know, it was always the choice about where are we going to go out for our next date? And the choice was we're going to go out to the movies, or we're going to go out somewhere, or, you know, why don't I cook dinner and you come on over to my house and we'll watch a movie together? You know? Sounds nice, right? Sounds romantic. Now I don't know about you, but for me, when I was doing the dinner and the movie at my place, I was hoping for more than dinner and a movie at my place a lot of the time. I guess I'm alone on that one, but that was just me. Not all the time, but there were many times where it was like I was hoping for a little bit more. You know, the fact of the matter is there are places that are more conducive to us being tempted in this area than others. So, hey, make some choices and predefine those boundaries. You know, because I'll tell you right now, if you're in the dark room and Let's Get It On is on for Marvin Gaye, that is not the time to try to define what it might look like to have a boundary in this area. Too late. Too late. And you know what? It's funny and it's comical, but you know what? There are people in here who toyed with that boundary last night, and you're living with the guilt of it this morning. And there are people in here who have already planned in their mind to make choices to toy with that boundary tonight. I'm telling you, you need to predefine a boundary on this one. I've just found in my life, don't wait till you get to that point, because at that point, willpower is no power at all. And it is before that point that you need to predefine the boundary. What are those places that you know are just conducive to that? Predefining a boundary for me. I'm a sales guy. I travel a lot for work. I'm in a bunch of hotels. A predefined boundary that I've created for myself. You know what? I've struggled with pornography in the past, and I know I'm susceptible to that in the future. When I check into a hotel, either at the front desk or the first phone call I make, is to say, please disconnect all the pay-per-view in my room. Just, I need to predefine that boundary. I don't even need to go there. I don't even need to have the temptation. Because again, at night when I can't sleep and I got the remote in my hand, that's not the time to be trying to define a boundary on that. So you got to predefine your boundaries. I'll tell you another one for me. Obviously, being in sales, there are times where you have national sales meetings. Anybody ever been to a national meeting for work or national sales meeting, anything like that? Talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. Man, the stuff that goes on, the stories you hear of the things that go on in that meeting, it's unbelievable. And so I've had to predefine some boundaries on that one, even though this isn't an area of temptation. I'm not tempted to cheat on my wife like that, but guess what? I need to predefine that boundary. So I have a simple rule. When the drinks start flowing, Chuck starts going. Real simple stuff. But for me, I need to do that. I need to predefine that boundary because I want to keep to a path far from her. I don't want to wait until I'm right up on the boundary and need to make a difficult decision when I can predefine some boundaries before I ever get to that point. We talked about people, we talked about places, and also things. I'll tell you one thing I think is so relevant to a lot of us is alcohol. You know, we know when we've had too much to drink that it lowers our inhibition. And I think if I were to poll people in here, there are situations that you've been in the past where you know you wish you could take that last one back. You wish you had a choice between that last one. Well, guess what? Am I saying that drinking is wrong? No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is predefine that boundary. Predefine that boundary. Find the areas in your life where you need to create some boundaries. Because what I've learned about boundaries is boundaries are not about all the stuff that I can't do. Boundaries are about what I can do to protect people I care about and to protect myself. So when I think about boundaries, it's about honoring people. You know, if you're here and you're not married yet, you want to communicate love. Define a boundary in this physical area and honor that. That communicates so much more love to a person than anything else you could ever do. Predefine those boundaries. Another hill that I die on. Third hill that I die on in this area, don't go it alone. Don't go it alone. Again, going back to the wisdom of the writer of Proverbs, and this time in Ecclesiastes, another book that is attributed to the same writer, we find these words about the need for relationship in this. He says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. I have a friend of mine, we were talking about this, and she said her sorority had a rule when she was in college. And the rule was no girl left behind. No girl left behind. I think that's great. And basically the rule was if five girls go into the party, five girls need to come out of the party. They're not going to leave one of their friends behind to be in a compromising situation. Great rule. And you know what? Still applies. We need no man left behind. We need no woman left behind today. We need people in our lives to speak truth to us. And we need people who can help us kind of live out those boundaries that we've set. That can help us guard our hearts. No man and no woman left behind. And I want you to think about this as like what you might have heard of an accountability group. That's a part of it, but it's not the whole thing. You know, think about accountability group of people in a circle, kind of saying all the bad stuff they've done, slapping each other on the wrist and saying, hey, don't do that again. It's more than that. This is about encouragement and people actually helping you to walk away from that before you get to that situation. Guys, you need other guys in your life who value this and who want to see you be pure and right. And you need guys who can say to you, hey, you know what? I don't think you need to engage in that relationship. Ladies, you need to listen to your friends when they see the stuff in guys that is not healthy. You need to not ignore that. You need to listen and lean into that. Don't go it alone. How many times have you been in a situation in a relationship and the very things that you wind up separating or breaking up for are the things that your girlfriend or your best friend told you like 5 days in? But you had the love goggles on and you didn't want to listen. Well, listen. Those things are in our life for a reason. Don't go it alone. There's a comedian I love, Cedric the Entertainer. Love Cedric the Entertainer. Cedric the Entertainer talked about this a couple years ago when he said all of us need what he called a hey dog friend. We need a hey dog friend. Now, I know I need to do some explaining because some of you might not be tracking with what I mean by that. When I say dog in this context, it's spelled D-A-W-G, and it's actually a term of endearment. And what he was saying is we need people in our lives to kind of pull us by the coattails when we step out of line and say, come on, dog. Hey, dog, you don't need to do that. We need a hey dog friend. And so some of you probably have people in your life like that. So what I want you to do is after the service, I want you to either pick up your cell phone or I want you to write them an email, write them a letter. And I want you to say thanks, dog, to your hey dog friends, because we need that. We need people in our lives to help kind of be that voice of reason. Do not go it alone. Just another hill that I found. You know what? I don't ever want to be in a situation where there's nobody that can speak truth into my life. And I don't ever want to be in a situation where I'm not open about the things that I struggle with so people know how to pray for me. They know what questions to ask me. They know how to challenge me. Don't go it alone on this one. You don't need to. Now, we've talked about the things that we own. I mean, all the things that I've talked about so far, these are things we got to make a choice about. Guarding our heart, we got to make a choice about that and what that looks like. Predefining those boundaries, we got to make some tough choices on that one. Don't go it alone. We own that one. But this fourth hill that I die on, this fourth hill for me is really where the power comes from, because this fourth hill is not about what I do. I don't own this one. This is where God comes in, and this is the thing that God owns and why it's so important that we do the fourth thing that I lean into, and that's lean into God's grace. We need to lean into God's grace. We need to understand that there are going to be times, I've had times where I've violated the other three hills. And I need to lean into God's grace on those times. I'm not sitting up here saying I'm perfect. I got a lot of crap in my life. I got a lot of stuff in my past. I got stuff I'm going to face in the future. But what I know is I need to lean into God's grace if I'm ever going to continue to see growth in this area. And when I lean into God's grace, I do see grace and I do see growth. That word grace, we talk about it a lot, and it has multiple definitions, but there are two that I think are really relevant to what we're talking about today. The first of these is grace is this idea of unmerited favor from God. The fact that God just chooses, he makes a decision to just be gracious to us and to give us favor. And when we talk about it in that term, all of us are experiencing levels of that grace right now. You're experiencing levels of that grace by having breath. You're experiencing that by having food and shelter and friendships, a place where you can come and learn about what God's desires are for you. Those are all levels of grace that we're experiencing. But there are other levels of grace that not all of us are experiencing. We can, but we're not experiencing it necessarily. Levels of grace, because there's this thing that happens when you enter into a relationship with Jesus Christ. What we find in the Bible is that there's a choice that's made by God, and what he says is, I'll remember your sins no more. This idea of forgiveness, this idea of remembering your sins no more, is a level of grace that is available that we may not all be experiencing. But grace also talks about this idea of divine empowerment, this power that comes not from me, but it comes outside of me, from God, and it enables me to live the life that God has for me. Grace. And we've got to lean into that on this one. Because after the three fail that we talked about, the things that we own, we're still going to be left with the question that Paul raised at the end. Is there anyone who can do anything to help me? Is there anyone that can do anything to help me? And that's when we have to come face to face with the fact that if God designed sex and he has a way that he wants it to work out in our lives, there's got to be a place where we lean into his grace. And for some of us, we need a better picture of what that looks like.
Oh my God. First grade. Whew. And I was stuck with that awful perm the whole year. I look like little orphan Annie. I will never let my hair grow out again. That's for sure. Let's see. Ah, this. This is a good one. Christmas. I was 9 years old. How was I supposed to know I had to wake everybody else up before I opened all the presents, huh? I can't believe you saved all this. High school. Yeah, that sucked. Ben. Yeah, he did me in the back of his car. No, it wasn't very romantic, but your first time never is, right? Jason. Matt. Jeff. So, that's what this is all about, isn't it? Well, then you probably want me to get to the good stuff. Time for your good laugh. Okay, huh. Paul, if that was his real name. We hooked up, we screwed, and he never called me again. I was pretty much used to that by then. What? Not enough? All right, let's see what else we got. Ah, okay, here's a good one. Spring break. Might as well have walked around with easy piece of ass tattooed on my forehead. I don't even remember this one's name. You know, why the hell would you save all this? Huh? I get it. The great gavel-wielding judge in the sky, huh? I'm on trial, right? And this This is the evidence. That's what you're all about, isn't it? You set expectations that no person could ever possibly live up to, watch them fail, pass judgment, then sit back and laugh as they relive it. What are you looking at? I know what you're thinking. I've heard it all before. Cheap slut. Dirty whore. Are you enjoying this? You know, I bet you actually like it better with an audience, don't you? Ah, yes. This is the one we have all come to see. Abortion! My abortion. What the hell else was I supposed to do? Are you ready to watch? Is everyone ready to watch? Yeah. Yeah, this should be real good. I hate you. And I hope you enjoy this. What is this? Some kind of sick joke? Nothing's there.
If you're in here and you have decided to be in a relationship with Christ, that is reality. The thing about grace is that He chooses not to see your sin anymore. And if that's not where you are, you can experience that grace. You see, regardless of where you are today, I want you to hear me on this. Grace is available to you. And there is grace available for forgiveness. And there is also power available to help you get through this. At the end of the service, we're going to have members of our prayer team up here to help pray for you. And if you want that grace, that is an offer that is open to you. They're going to be up at the front. And then also if you walk out that door, there'll be people there to meet you and pray with you there as well.